Hello, and welcome to NARC, Narcissistic Abuse Recovery Collaborators, home of NARC Troopers. If you enjoy today's episode, please visit my website, narctroopers.com, where you will find articles, podcasts, and a video blog. Today's topic is the two phases of recovery following relationship trauma. These are the steps to freedom from NAS, which is Narcissistic Abuse Syndrome. Yep, that's the thing. If you haven't heard of NAS or NAS, maybe it's NAS, but that kind of sounds ugly. So, Narcissistic Abuse Syndrome. All right, so let's first talk about level one, learning about personality disorders and dismantling of the trauma bond and addiction. Fresh after the discard, or escape, if you're so fortunate, it may take months or even years to recover and to regain some semblance of a fulfilling life and be free from the trauma-induced CPTSD and other manifestations of the toxic partnering. First, the individual must do damage control and figure out how to keep functioning well enough to carry on with obligations, just daily stuff, family, job, just all the logistics of living. The next step, after you get that going on, is to put on your snorkel and take a deep dive, exploration of what you are dealing with. Yeah, of what you were dealing with, because it is something else that you probably have never heard about. So you have to figure out what your partner was and kind of what to expect after being in a relationship with a person like that for an extended time. And then after you do all that deep sea diving, finally, one must attack the problem of the trauma bond addiction to the partner with narcissistic personality disorder, from here forward called NPD, antisocial personality disorder, ASPD, and of course, the big kahuna, psychopathy. You have to continue functioning and living life. In the beginning, when you are thrust into the aftermath of an abusive relationship with a disordered partner who suffers from NPD, or some variation of it, there can be a complete collapse that assaults every part of your being. It can cause biochemical reactions, physiological symptoms, emotional unraveling, spiritual annihilation, physical pain and disease, and even more. It is, for lack of better words, a whole body experience. It attacks every part of you, body, mind, and soul. So, of course, there's no quick recovery. You have a lot of layers of recovery that have to happen before you can hope to just get on with your life. You may have CPTSD symptoms, complex PTSD, such as insomnia, flashbacks, triggers, acute anxiety, brain fog, crippling panic attacks, suicidal ideation, shaking and trembling, night terrors, despair, intrusive, looping, obsessive thoughts and ruminations, fibromyalgia, digestive issues, excessive weight loss or weight gain, adrenal fatigue, and just, complete hopelessness and despair. It's just, there are no words for it. But you can't just curl up in a fetal position and die. That's not an option. You may have children who need you. You may have a job that you cannot miss. There could be obligations that cannot be neglected simply because you are experiencing a complete meltdown of epic proportions. You don't have that luxury. Probably you don't. You can't afford collateral damage in the form of your career, your livelihood, relationships with family or friends or any other necessary part of your life. You just simply can't afford it. You've lost enough already, so you have to keep going. But now you may ask, how do I do that? How do I keep going? Well, I think you need to see a professional and, medical professional, mental health professional. Tell them you are in crisis. Ask for something to help you manage the panic attacks and anxiety. Klonopin, which is benzodiazepam, was a lifesaver for me. I microdosed a fourth of a tab of this benzo every 2 hours through the day to stave off the panic attacks. It kept me on my feet and it kept me in front of my classroom of students. I'm a high school junior and senior student teacher. I'm not a student teacher. Juniors and seniors are my students and I teach them, which I could not do in this condition because I was totally wiped out. I just was. So I had to have that. I knew I didn't want to be on it permanently, but it was a necessary thing to have to get me through the first few months that were really impossible to get through by myself. I couldn't do it. So you can go to your place of worship, and see what resources they may have to offer. And if you do seek a therapist, you need to seek one that's trained in narcissistic abuse recovery. Sometimes they say they are, but they are not. You need to find a specialist, not just someone who did a workshop one weekend on it. You need someone who specializes in that, because the deeper they understand it, the quicker your recovery can go, and the sooner you're going to be out of pain. Look online in your city if you don't have any qualified practitioners or providers with this specialty. You have to do your due diligence and vet your person before you choose them. Check them out, make them pass muster, I guess is how that goes. The next thing you need to do is you need to find your tribe. Seek narcissistic abuse recovery groups through Meetup, Codependence Anonymous. There's Al-Anon. Codependence Anonymous is called CODA, CODA, which is definitely worth doing because you can get a sponsor just like they have an AA for Alcoholics Anonymous, and you don't realize why you would need one maybe right now, but trust me, having a sponsor will come in handy more times than you can imagine in the coming months that are ahead of you if you're just getting started. For those veterans of the war, you know what I'm talking about. Those times when you want to break no contact and text them or call them, you call your sponsor instead. It's an addiction. It's just like wanting to take a drink. You need somebody that's going to help you stop yourself from doing it because it's only going to delay your recovery and cause you pain. Yep. So you need to find this group, find your tribe, and find these people that you need them for support. You have to have them for support. You can't do this by yourself. Most friends and family have no idea what is happening to you. So friends and family are not always the best choice to help you through this. Sometimes you need people who have actually experienced it and are ahead of you on the recovery arc. And they can tell you what to expect and pitfalls to avoid. And just the wisdom of the experience of surviving this will be cr a critical part of your healing. Got to trust me on that. It's really true. There are no exceptions. That you need that. So family and friends have no idea what's happening to you, so they can only be of just a little bit of help and support, but not really to get in there and do the hard work. You can meditate, pray, practice mindfulness, and then pray some more. Can also take natural supplements that help with the neurotransmitters, which is kind of what the SRI prescription drugs do, and that's the first line of defense against this kind of thing, is when you go to the mental health professionals or even the medical doctor. My medical doctor was trying to prescribe me SRI medications to remap my brain and to regulate the serotonin and other hormones and chemicals being released that were all jacked up and out of whack because of the trauma. You can take supplements to help regulate that, like 5-HTTP. That's the name of it, the number 5-HTTP. Magnesium helps, vitamin B, vitamins, B12 in particular, and others. There's a lot of information about that online. You can look it up to see what supplements would be good for you. When you finish this experience, I think you're going to be much closer to understanding how your body works, how your mind works. You're going to be closer to God and to spirit and to source, after this experience. If all else fails, you can call the crisis hotlines. There's suicide hotlines and then there's crisis hotlines. And I called both for those first few months. And I found that crisis hotline was really helpful because it's not necessarily meaning that you're suicidal. It just means you're overwhelmed, you're having a meltdown, and you need somebody to help ground you and help bring you back to a place where you can manage yourself. So don't hesitate. They're good people. They're there for you to talk to you, and they will listen and help you in ways that friends and family just can't. They just can't. It's too much for them to probably see you in that condition. So you just get up and you get going and keep going. You have to learn what NPD and cluster B disorders are. G.I. Joe often said, you know what he said, right? Can you guess? You remember? Knowing is half the battle. Yeah, knowing is half the battle. Well, I don't know if it's half the battle, but it is very critically important to roll up your sleeves and start learning everything you can about narcissistic personality disorder. Learning everything about it's going to help you understand what happened, why it happened, and how it will always happen with these disordered people on the NPD spectrum. And it is on a spectrum, like so many mental health issues are. It's going to help you to make sense out of the madness that seems to be, just everywhere. And it will give structure and shape to your reactions to it, kind of to help you understand things like your trauma and the trauma bonding, intermittent reinforcement, parentification, cognitive dissonance, delusional disorders, schizoid disorders, all the different things that you really need to know to be able to deal with this. That's one of your very first steps. Really educate yourself. Really go on that deep dive. Once you have that, then you can move forward armed with a full understanding of the situation and what is needed to recover. And you know what? There's hundreds of resources that you can use when you're ready to dive in. Professionals, life coaches, recovery specialists, doctors, therapists, and healers of all stripes. Will guide you to the next level of healing and strengthen you as you navigate these dark waters that you find yourself drowning in right now. This list that I just mentioned consists of people that I have used to help me, but I'm certain that there are many others that I have failed to mention. So don't limit your search just to what I said. There's websites, blogs, vlogs, articles, YouTube videos, podcast channels, courses, workshops, programs, a lot of them free, some of them cost money. You start searching for them and then just jump in, trial and error, try it all out and start reading, listening, and watching. Podcast kept me alive. Music it was a trigger for a whole year or more. I couldn't listen to it because it set me off, and I couldn't breathe, and my heart started beating really fast, and all that started happening. So no music, couldn't watch television either. I know, and because it really would have been nice just to veg out and binge watch some Netflix or something, but I couldn't. It was a trigger also. So the only thing that I could do, since I couldn't watch TV, couldn't listen to music, reading was really hard because I had so much brain fog and cognitive dissonance. I couldn't focus on that. And since I taught all day, I was done with reading by the time I got home. So I listened to podcasts on my way to work, on my way home from work, while I was feeding myself, as I was taking my shower. I even put the phone up with the podcast playing in the shower. I listened to it at bedtime because I have insomnia. I can't go to sleep. I haven't slept like a normal person in 2 years, 2 months, and 2 weeks. I think that's about right. I can't go to sleep. I've been getting like 4 or 5 hours of sleep since the discard, since he left. And it's not because, well, it's not for bad reasons, like you're thinking, well, you're just crazy, just letting yourself get out of control. No, I really can't. I've tried everything and I refuse to dose up with Ambien or something like that. Maybe some of you can tolerate it, but I am not one of those people. And I think it would just push me over the edge. I'd be one of those people sleepwalking and going over to his house and ending up in jail or something. So, no Ambien for me. So, here's some helpful things that you could think about when you're thinking about where to start. Melanie Tonya Evans, I used her podcast. Lisa Romano. Now, listen, I play YouTube videos on my car because I have the YouTube app on my phone. It doesn't have to be on the podcast channel. I play YouTube videos by Melanie Tonya Evans and by Lisa Romano and some of these other people, Kim Saeed, Dr. Romani, Rhonda Freeman, Angie Atkinson, Betrayal Trauma Recovery is her channel, Rebecca Zung, Meredith Miller. There's a lot of really good ones. I don't think all of them have podcasts, but you know what? You just hit play on the YouTube thing and connect it to your Bluetooth. You're going to hear it like a podcast while you're driving. You're going to hear it like a podcast in your earbuds when you're cleaning house. And it helped me keep my sanity. It helped me get away from my thoughts that I was drowning in, but it wasn't a trigger. So, podcast, yeah, babe. That is definitely a very handy tool to have when you're struggling. When you're ready for the, now, those are the people you need to cut your teeth on. Cut your teeth on the guys I just mentioned because they have basics and foundational things you need to know. They talk about things like what is word salad? What is gaslighting? Why does the narcissist hoover? Stuff like that. But once you have digested all of that, you can go to level two and level up. And on that level, I've got two narcissists, narcissistic psychopaths that I just adore them. They have the greatest content, and you also kind of get it like from the viewpoint of a narcissist. Like, what's it like to be them? It's very rare that you have a self-aware narcissist who knows what they are. If they're truly a pathologically disordered narcissist with delusions and schizoid tendencies, and it's like the mental illness part, not the kind of narcissist like, oh, we're all narcissists. Yeah, we are, but not like this. This goes far on the other deep end of becoming an impediment to their life where they can't function. They make bad decisions. They're everything, they have no core to them. So these two people that I found that are narcissists who have sort of leveraged that to create a lot of content are very impressive narcissists. And like I said, they're rare because they are self-aware. They know what they are. And most narcissists, the low level and the mid-level narcissists, have no idea that they are narcissists. I'm sure they know that there's something wrong with them, but they don't understand what it is. They don't believe you when you tell them. It just doesn't resonate with them. They don't get it. Those two people are Sam Vaknin, V-A-K-N-I-N, Sam Vaknin. I really enjoy him. He's very academic. He has a PhD. He's a professor. He has written a bunch of books, and he's super, super smart. So if you like the academic, scholarly kind of researched stuff, for level two, I recommend him. You know, sometimes he's a little hard to take, but mostly I've learned a lot from him. And the other is H.G. Tudor. Now, he's a little bit more dramatic, less scholarly, less academic, but the foundations of what he talks about are no less important. They are important. They are level two important stuff because he's got his own spin on it and his own verbiage and language that he uses to talk about it, his own diction and word choice. And it's really quite fascinating. I've learned a lot from him too. He's got some podcasts that are kind of dramatic because his voice is very scary, kind of. The other guy has an acute sense of humor, Sam Vaknin. I appreciate his humor, but H.G. Tudor, no humor. He's a very dry, arrogant, entitled narcissist that comes across, and he's just got this voice that's just so, I don't know. You'll see if you check him out. But let's not start with that. If you have been in recovery for a while, if you've been at this for, I would say, 6 months or more, and you have all the foundational knowledge in place, then you can start adding Sam Vaknin and H.G. Tudor. If you do them before you do the other, you're not going to have the understanding that you need to have to be able to fully appreciate what these guys have to offer. So please do it in order. You know, it's really going to work out better for you that way. I'm a teacher. I've been teaching for decades. I know what I'm talking about, guys. All right. Two final suggestions of high popularity are Richard Grannon and Brené Brown. They're very mainstream. Everybody has that. You have name recognition for these guys. You'd say Brené Brown. They did that at my school. They used her for in-service training for teachers. And I'm like, I thought she was a narcissistic abuse specialist. And here we are looking at Brené Brown in regard to like training teachers how to be sensitive to students' needs during this difficult time or something. Okay, whatever. But they're very like, you know, I don't want to minimize or discount the value of their work by saying that they're pop culture, because that carries a really negative connotation. So let's not say that. Let me just say they're mainstream. They have name recognition. They're the big fish that sort of, you know, they're the big fish. You know what that means. So let me tell you, you must break the trauma bond and get free of addiction. That's something that you need to do. During the narcissistic cycles of abuse, partners who are engaged in the shared fantasy, that's what it's called, during the golden period and during the time you're thinking that you're in something that's real and okay and everything, you often become addicted to that person that's abusing you. You know, it kind of works like this. They are cult-like programming or conditioning you in some way, and that results in something that resembles sort of Stockholm syndrome. There's intermittent abuse that's alleviated by periods of kindness and sweetness and wonderful bliss and all of that good stuff. And it's a break. It's a reprieve. It's like time out from the pain. So when that happens, dopamine floods your brain, because it's such a relief not to be suffering and to have the pain. And it feels so good that it's like, you know, injecting heroin in your eyeballs or something. You are tripping on the good stuff. And man, it's good. I mean, it is strong, this brain chemical. And so your brain acts like a drug on heroin. It provides this blast of relief and bliss, and you're incapable of seeing that, seeing that the person that's making you feel that way is also an abuser. So you should run away, but you don't, because you stay through the rough stuff. You stay through the abuse because you know you're going to get a hit of that good stuff if you just wait. If you just hold on, the good stuff's coming. The good stuff's coming. Gotta have it. Gotta have it. Oh, yeah. It's like that. And, it is very much the same dynamic as addiction. So you just kind of have to look at it that way. We who have loved these people, we're love junkies. We're junkies. We're love junkies, relationship junkies. We're narcissist junkies, addicted to them and to that chemical that they provide when they're nice, because they're not always naughty. They're naughty and nice. And so when they're naughty, you look away. And when they're nice, it's like, oh yeah, come to mama. So I don't know where that came from. I don't know. I think weird things sometimes. So anyway, if you get caught up in the cycle, then you're incapable of running away. You minimize it, you discount it, you deny it, justify it, rationalize it, dismiss it. All their transgressions, boundary violations, betrayals, criminal acts of and misdeeds, all of it. All of it. You just put up with it so you can get that hit, get that fix of that those brain chemicals. It affects the serotonin levels along with cortisol and other brain chemicals that keep you addicted in this whole cycle of abuse. So you get bonded to the abuser through this whole brain chemicals and trauma in the body and stuff. So this bond has to be severed and the addiction must be addressed if there's any hope that you're going to get free from this. That's why it's so hard to go no contact and to maintain some strict policy of like, get away, stay away, you know? The addicted partner often hopes that they will be hoovered, which means the narcissist comes back and sucks them back in like a vacuum cleaner, hoovering them, sucking them back in. A lot of us hope that's going to happen. I see all the questions on Quora all the time. Is my narcissist going to hoover me? Do they always hoover? How long does it take before they come back and do the hoover? And you know what they're thinking, because I've thought the same thing. What would I do if he showed up at my front door right now? Right? Would I peep out the little hole and see him and say, oh, hell no, and call 911 and have the police come pick him up? I don't know. That's what I should do. But, I might just open that door and invite him in and off we go to fantasy land again because it's that strong of a draw. The whole addiction thing is really that powerful. So, what do I want to tell you next? There are many techniques that range from pattern interrupt to EDMR and all this that can reset your brain when all the chemicals hijack your reasoning and logic and all of your sense, all of your ethics, all of your dignity. Gone. Oh, trust me, it just goes right out the window. Boom. I hadn't seen my narcissist ex-husband in over a year. Oh gosh, no, wait a second. I saw him last November, so it had been it had been a year and a half or so. And I thought, I'm gonna see him, it's not gonna be any big deal. I'm gonna give him a few of his things. It's gonna be all right. Man, I got one look at him and it was like I got struck by lightning. I nearly fell out of my chair. I was overwhelmed with a rush of emotion that started in my head and my chest, and it just radiated through my body like electricity. I couldn't help but smiling. I got awkward. I was fumbling and stumbling and dropping my stuff, forgetting my words. I was like a middle school kid, in the lunchroom, that is somehow finds themselves sitting across from their secret crush. That's what it was like. I thought I was just going to implode just sitting there. It was powerful stuff. And what I should have said was, you are a mentally like ill person with character deficits and incapable of love, empathy, incapable of being, you know, a neurotypical person. So I'm done. I was so done. I'm not going to let you affect me anymore. But that is not what happened. And that's not how I felt when I saw him. So do not underestimate the power of all the stuff that's going on with that. There's a lot of things you can do to work on it. But, you know, maybe you need a sponsor. I needed a sponsor I could have go with me to keep me from getting in that position. That's what I should have done, is taken my sponsor with me. So think of it like this. This is how you need to think about it. What would a drug addict do? What would an alcoholic do in that situation? You know, they would do a 12-step meeting or something after this, or they would get their sponsor to go with them. You know, of course, acknowledging the addiction is the first step. And I think that what we want to do is try to maintain some sobriety. Yeah, some sobriety. All right, that took a while to talk about stage one. That's stage one of recovery. All of that, the learning, educating yourself about it, and the, you know, all that we just talked about is step one, building your tribe. So let's talk about step two. After you've done all this, and depending on the length of the time that you spent with them, who knows how long it could take? It could take a long time. It could take years or months. I guarantee you it's not just going to be a matter of weeks. That never happens. We're talking months or years. So at some point, hopefully, you're going to get to level two. Yeah, level up, power up, yay. So this is the part where you heal your old wounds, and then you have the construction of a whole new self. You know, they say something about how the cells in your body are replaced every 7 years, and that's why your taste buds change every 6 or 7 years. And it's like, I used to hate celery. Well, actually, I still hate celery. Let me think of something else. I used to hate pickles, but now when I go to Chick-fil-A, I leave that pickle on that sandwich because my taste buds have changed. I can tolerate the pickle. And if you had shown me that pickle a couple of years ago, nuh-uh, not having it. So people replace their cells every 7 years or so. You're having to build yourself from scratch. You're not just resurrecting yourself. Recovering implies that you're going back to retrieve something, like a dog fetching a bone, like you're going back for your old life, for what you lost. But I don't want you to think of it that way. I want you to think of this as that you are constructing and building. You are the architect of your future. You are the architect of your dreams. And you are the architect of your freedom. And if you want to recover from this, you have to start from scratch. Tabula rasa, clean slate, and just build from the ground up. A whole new support system, a whole new ideology of ethics, of morals, of what you believe, a whole new world. As I'm quoting Disney Toons, I shouldn't do that. They have crazy copyright laws. Probably because I said that word, they're going to come after me. Okay, so step two is the healing of your inner childhood wounding and toxic scripting, plus the construction and building of a whole new self. So after you have completed all those other steps in part one, then you get to go to part two. Yep. Pass go. During this phase, the focus is on you, not them. Phase one, you're learning about them. Phase one, you're accepting what they are. Phase one, you're doing all that stuff. But on phase two, it's all about you. Phase two is about you. Yeah. And you're not thinking about the dysregulated, mentally impaired partner that you have worked so hard to try to understand and to release and let go of all through part one. But it's your turn now. To begin, you have to unpack the trauma, the wounding, the toxic scripting and programming from early childhood that has impacted your life in negative ways and may have become a dysfunctional pattern. I know it was a pattern with me. I did it three times in my life, and that pretty much took up my whole life. Three relationships with three unwell, not okay people. And why? Because my childhood was such a train wreck. My mom was mentally off her rocker, bless her poor heart. And I just tried to do what good old mom showed me all those years. It was some wild stuff. That's why I picked people who were not okay, because she wasn't okay. And so you got to figure that stuff out next in stage two. You got to figure out what happened to you that caused you to be a good target, that caused you to be vulnerable. I've heard people say, oh, we just hate it when people blame us. We're the victim. We were smart. We are gorgeous. We were successful. And they just came after us like the predator they are, like the demon they are, and they just gobbled us up. Well, that's not really true, because a healthy person would not have been deceived that way. I'm sorry, people. That's just true. A healthy, neurotypical, well-balanced, adjusted person with great boundaries and that has the whole red flag alert system going on, where when the red lights start blinking, you head for the door and you exit and you keep going and you do not look back. A normal, average, healthy person that's healthy and has no issues. No attachment disorders and abandonment disorders and dependency disorders like codependency and stuff like that. A healthy person would walk the F away. So there has to be something that makes you vulnerable to what they do, to all their Houdini magic wizardry that they put the hoodoo and the voodoo on you. You're vulnerable because there's something in you that is making you vulnerable to people that are predatory, like the narcissist. And they are predatory. You got to figure out what it is. And you have to be willing to look at yourself and turn inward and go down in. You went deep sea diving trying to figure out what they were, what happened with them. What happened in the relationship? You've done an autopsy on the cadaver of your marriage or your relationship. Okay, that's done. Now it's time to do the autopsy on yourself, because what you have is something that has ceased to thrive or live. So you need to just let it go. Quit trying to resuscitate it or teach it new things. Sometimes they just can't. Sometimes it's better just to scrap it and start from scratch. And that's what I'm suggesting that you do. Find that inner child, grab her by the hand or him by the hand, lead them to safety and start over in a new place with a new life and with new, fresh ideas and enthusiasm and hopes and dreams. New being the key word. Take that inner child that lives inside of you and lead them to safety and then create and build. And it should be a fabulous, invigorating experience to do that, because you're free and you have real feelings. You have real values and ethics and morals. You have real capacity to love. You're a full-fledged, warm-blooded human, not someone that has been traumatized and victimized to the point that they're just dead inside. That they just murdered themselves and replaced their true self with a fake self, with a false persona. You're not that. You can heal. You can create. You can be. They cannot. They are what they are. They're going to repeat the same thing they did with you, with someone else, and then with someone else, and it's just going to keep going, and they are never going to change, and they're never going to see the light. They will never be at peace. They're like a shark that has to keep moving. Sharks have to keep moving. They can't just sit still. They're always moving in the water, constantly moving, looking for food. And they're the ultimate predator. And so is the narcissist, constantly moving, constantly looking. Just picture them swimming back and forth like a shark. You know, sharks are kind of beautiful, but they're also freaking scary. Don't want to swim with the sharks. No, you're going to be fish food. One bite, chomp, that's it, it's over. You're going to bleed out and game over. So, yeah, let's put the shark away and think about yourself. You have to unpack all of your baggage. Unpack that baggage. Unpack the baggage, right? Deal with your inner wounding. Do some triage. Bandage it up. Patch it up. Tell that little person that's little mini you that lives inside of you, tell them, hey, I'm so sorry that you're scared or that you're lonely or that you're sad or that you're having this or that or whatever. I am here and I'm not going to abandon you. I love you. Let's go have a wonderful life. Let's be happy. Let's be free. Come with me. Trust me. Let's go. Let's go. Come on. That's what you need to just say it out loud. Talk to your inner self and tell them, come on, we're going on an adventure. You've sat in here long enough being miserable. I'm here to rescue you. You need to understand the consequences of your vulnerabilities, whatever broken or damaged things that you hold, whatever traumatic things that you hold in your body and in your soul. You got to look at them. You don't want to look at it because maybe they're shameful or ugly or difficult or painful, but you have to. You got to turn around and face the beast that is inside of you, conquer it, slay your dragon, and then live happily ever after. I think of Khaleesi jumping on the dragon's back. Any Game of Thrones fan, this is a reference to Game of Thrones. I want to be Khaleesi that rides the dragon into the sky and is just free. I hated the way that thing ended, and I just want you to say, I just want to tell you, I think she's still a hero in my mind, even though she went nuts and did bad things in the end. That should never have been written that way. Shame on them. We need to keep our heroes heroes, and she was a freaking hero with those dragons. Oh my gosh, and she kept her hair so perfect. What the heck? Whoever wrote that last season should do prison time or something. I don't know. Anyway, if you've never watched Game of Thrones, you probably don't know what I'm talking about. Sorry about that. Quick divergence there. Let me get back on track and finish this. Sorry, we're also going long today. There's a lot to say about this, guys. I want to give it all to you and have you sit there and marinate in it. Think about it for a while until it makes sense to you. I want you to invite you to listen to this multiple times. The same episode till it sinks in, and then share it with someone else who's going through the same thing. So most, but not all of us have some kind of something that has gone on in our homes or in our lives that is not as it should be, some dysfunctional something that we need to deal with. And, you know, it's a long road to recovery. And when you realize that you must turn inward to resolve the issues that need your attention if you want to heal and become impervious to future dysfunctional predators and partnerships, you got to go inwards to find that and like do the triage, bandage the wounds, grab her or him and exit the building, find the new life, start from scratch, build it the way you want it, healthy, happy, strong. You know, with the help of trained therapists and coaches, the wounded partner can begin a dialogue with their inner self and uncover toxic programmings from their childhood, develop self-preservation strategies, advocate for themselves, and have love, kindness, and forgiveness. You know, you have to find the sources of your fear and dispel them and be brave in place of fear. Fear is a magnet for evil, bad things. Fear draws bad things to you. If you are brave, It's like a shield. It's like protection from the darkness. So if you are a fearful person, and I know I am, I fear so many things. I fear growing old alone. I fear just being alone in like from now until I do die. I fear a slow, horrible death. I fear a lot of things. Fear, I struggle with that, and I know it. I've identified it so I can work on it and try to be braver. You know, I'm getting ready to move. This is August 2021. My lease is up at the end of the school year at the end of May. And I'm going to practice what I preach. I'm making a plan right now. I'm making a plan for how I'm going to start building. I'm already building. I'm building by making a plan. So you have to learn to have inner validation, self-validation, instead of depending on others to define you and provide it for you. You've got to grow your identity, your power, your courage. And when all of the internal mechanisms are working properly, there will be no more attachment to the narcissist, nor the possibility for new toxic partnering. You must develop your own self-care system to manage your emotions. And so you understand what needs to happen. A sort of quantum theory, you know, whatever happens within is what you draw to you without. That means outside of yourself, externally. Whatever condition your inside is what you bring to you from the outside. That makes sense, right? Heal the inside, and then you only attract and manifest similar healthy things. But if you're yucky in there, you're going to attract yucky things. How does one get this accomplished? Well, it is imperative to take slow steps towards building and this new scaffolding, right, that will support you with your new self-sustainable life. You can't rush through it, because if you do, you're going to build a house that will not stand. Think of it as installing the framework of a building, complete with solar panels, rain barrels, a beautiful garden, perhaps a few chickens and goats, community garden, I don't know. You're creating the inner landscape that's going to support you without the necessity of going outside yourself to get it. That's what you're building. And yeah, it's going to take a little while, but it is absolutely necessary. You know, you will sit with yourself often and ask yourself, what am I feeling? And why do I need that right now? What do I need right now? Why am I feeling this way? You know, and just do some self-analysis and self-reflection. You know, you're going to do for yourself all that you did for your narcissist person. The same love and energy and patience and forgiveness and presence and faith and availability and support and love and all of that, you're going to give it to yourself instead of them. Because you can't help them. You can't change them. You can't fix them. You can only do that with yourself. Even if you are resistant at first, or maybe resentful that you have to do this at all, that you have to go solo for a while. I know that was a big one for me. Why did I have to do this? This isn't fair. I was a good person. I did good things. I had good intentions. I've never done anything wrong. I never cheated. I never betrayed. I never got fussy, you know, like mean, or, I mean, I don't deserve this. Why do I have to be alone? I see people that are partnered up and they're horrible people and they have a partner. I'm a good person. Why don't I have one? I went through that and I was resentful. Like, this isn't fair. I don't like it. You know, you're gonna fail if you keep that mindset. You have to let it go. You do. You have to find the inner strength to do the work so that you can get free and whole and experience healthy relationships with other people. That's just as simple as that. Simple as pie. You have to create and keep healthy boundaries. Okay, so you've completed all the steps and you've finished all the hard work above, the last piece before you venture out into the world is something you got to do to protect everything you've built. You know, it would be a tragedy to spend all the time and energy to build this new life and new self, only to allow someone to come along and destroy all that you have created. The chance of attracting another narcissist or psychopath after completing the recovery process is very slim. But these are dangerous times, and more disordered people are predatory in search of some vulnerable, juicy target like you. So you have to make sure you're healed, you're whole, you're not fragmented, you're not waiting for somebody to complete you. You got to make sure you got all this right, because the best way to avoid these unsavory and mentally impaired people is to create firm and healthy boundaries and practice what to say and do should someone attempt to breach these walls and storm your castle. That's right. You don't want your castle to be stormed. Practice, then enforce, and consistently employ the disengage and distance plan to remain far away from the dark woods where danger lurks, you know? It's like Little Red Riding Hood should have stayed on the path. And you need to stay on the path, because when you wander and you go into the woods, you know what's in those woods. Yeah, you have lain down with what is in those woods, and they went for the throat, and they just ripped it out like wolves do, and you don't want that to happen ever, ever again, ever. Stay on the path. Stay on the path, and you're going to be fine. In conclusion, finally, recovery comes in stages and phases and cannot be rushed or ignored without putting yourself at risk of another disastrous partnership with another predator who's incapable. It's not a choice. They're incapable of ever being healthy or well. They could get better. They could get worse. It all goes in cycles. But, you know, they're missing a key component of themselves that is just almost impossible to replace. Never say never. I heard, Sam Vaknin was talking about, you know, if narcissism really isn't a personality disorder, maybe it's a trauma response. Maybe it's like PTSD. Because sometimes all of that can be very scary and very destructive to the person. And if it is that, we know how to heal trauma. We know how to, like, do that. There are ways to mediate that. So if it is trauma, then maybe at some point in the future, we send people to space, maybe we can figure out how to bring a narcissist back to life and to give him his heart back and resuscitate him, reanimate him, or whatever, you know? Because if you try, I personally have not ever seen that happen. And I personally believe that they just go out there and continue the cycle of abuse. But I don't want to ever say never. I just don't want you to have hope that that's going to happen for you, because there's like 0.01 chance that that would happen. Seriously, statistically, the odds, it's against you. It's not, you know, give it up. Let it go. Life is too short to gamble on something like that. You know, that's not just a long shot. You're putting all your treasure on a dead horse. Ghost horse. All right, so last thing to say, you know, it may be difficult at first to accept that this is your challenge, but it does get a little bit easier, and you can actually be successful if you're ready. If you're ready to commit to a better life. So that's it, guys. 45 minutes of some very important stuff to take to heart, and I hope it helps you, regardless of what stage you are following what happened to you in a relationship with your disordered, mentally impaired person with their character deficit and all the problems that they have. They probably have other problems too that are undiagnosed. You never know. I find that most people have lots of crazy stuff going on, and they, you'd be surprised how many. It's like, comorbidities, mutual stuff. So let's just accept it what it is, because it's not happening, and we need to focus on ourselves if we're in stage two, and really find ways to make that happen, make that your goal. So I've talked about stage one extensively. I've talked about stage two extensively, and I believe with all my heart and soul, not just from my own experience, but from all my research, support groups, clients that I have, hundreds of people that I talk to, on emails and messaging and Zoom meetings and you name it. After all that, I can co with confidence tell you what I've shared with you, that's how it needs to go down. That's what's going to work for you. And you just need to jump in and commit to making it happen. Okay, that's it. If you like my work, follow me. Follow me on here. Subscribe to the podcast. And you can also follow me on medium.com. I have about 140 articles. So at different stages of your recovery, I'm sure there are articles that are appropriate for you. These are not just, bare facts or something. They're well written. I can say that there's very few things that I do well, but writing, happens to be one of the things that I do well. I could probably count everything I do well on one hand, maybe on three fingers, and writing is one of them. So I think you will find the writing to be educational, inspirational, and just beautifully written to really stick with you. It has a stickiness quality. And I think it will really resonate with you and be like a good dose of medicine for you. So check out those articles on Medium, follow my podcast, and check out my YouTube vlog, guys. I have a YouTube channel, NARC Troopers, Narcissistic Abuse Recovery Collaborators. I got to work on that name. It's a mouthful, right? It's hard to remember. Peschetta is my name. Sometimes you can just Google Peschetta on social media and it'll take you to the right channel. Pesqueda. But I have over 80 videos. And you know what? I have a huge following from my podcast. I think they've been listened to almost 60,000 times. 60,000 times all over the world. The articles I have grown very day by day. I have gotten a number each day for 2 years that I've been doing this now while I'm in my recovery. Each day there's a couple more people who follow me on Medium, and so I'm over 1,000 followers, and it took 2 years to get 1,000 followers because I didn't pay somebody to go scoop them up off of however they do that. Like there's ways they do that. I just let it happen naturally. And the people that follow me because they want to get the articles in their inbox email every time I put a new one out, which is once a week. I do one article a week, one podcast a week, and I'm going to try to do two vlogs a week. The podcast and the articles are the same content. One is written, one is audio. On the podcast, though, I use it as a template, and then I just kind of make stuff up and ad lib and add things and subtract things as I go. But the topic is the same. So you can find an article. It's not going to be just like this, but it will be very similar. You can find an article about the two steps of relationship recovery from narcissism. You can find that on Medium by Peschetta, last name. Pesqueda.medium.com. The video vlogs or have nothing to do with the articles or the podcast. They are my independent thoughts, separate, unfiltered, raw, and random. And they're the most fun of all because they're like unscripted, just like, what am I thinking right now? All right, let's talk about dating after narcissistic abuse. And then we talk about that for a while. So check out my video blog on YouTube. Okay, that's enough pitching my stuff. Bye.